Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, last year I was finally pregnant, and now I'm finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. Hello, how are you doing? I'm really excited to share today's episode of the Finally Pregnant podcast with you because it's a chat I had a few weeks ago with Dr. Jessica Zucker, creator of the Insta account I Had a Miscarriage, and she is now author of a book of the same name. Since our chat, it can now be revealed that Jessica is working with Peanut and Chrissy Teigen on a new campaign, The Renaming Revolution, which is set to reform the outdated terminology tied to pregnancy and motherhood once and for all. They want to create a glossary of new terms that will empower women and allow them to take back control over their own fertility and motherhood journeys, no matter what those journeys might be. I don't know if you saw recently that Chrissy Teigen was talking about a woman who was called a geriatric mum. And I know that that was the term that was used for me, certainly, because it's anyone over 35. And I was definitely in that category when I had Ren. And I know that lots of you might be in that category as well. So, and it's just not the nicest word, is it? It makes us feel even older than we might feel already. And so I just feel like this is like exciting doesn't necessarily feel like the right word, but it does feel exciting. Do you know what I mean? It also comes in the same week as New Zealand announced that couples who have a miscarriage or stillbirth will be eligible for paid bereavement leave under a new law. This time off allows mothers and partners to come to terms with their loss without having to take sick leave. And it applies to those having a child through adoption or surrogacy as well, which is just really, really brilliant of New Zealand. And although something I didn't realize until I read the reports about this was it's already the case in India, with New Zealand now being the second country to adopt it. And what we want now is for every other country to follow suit as soon as possible. If you're new around here, this is something I like to talk about pretty much every time, just in case this is your first listen and this might be exactly what you need to hear. I run a yoga course called the Finally Pregnant Yoga Sessions, and they run each month, and we are now taking bookings for May. April is already sold out, I'm afraid. And yeah, people have already booked on for the May one, which is just amazing. There is a potential to add an extra course in May, UK time wise, that would be a morning or lunchtime. So if that's of interest to you, please drop me a line and let me know. Whether you're based in the UK or if you are elsewhere in the world, let me know, because I recently had someone from New Zealand actually contact me. And if we can make that work, then I'm totally going to do it. We've previously had people join from the States, and yeah, just want to make it as inclusive as possible. So get in touch if that's you. Ren. Oh my goodness. Well, my baby is fast becoming a proper little girl. You might have seen on Instagram recently that she had her first ponytail. Oh, I know it sounds silly, but honestly, it was the cutest thing. And I know that you might hear people say this all the time, and it's a bit like, really? But honestly, each new stage and age really feels better than the last. Well, they're probably all equally as good, perhaps, but it's just, it's good for new reasons, which feels maybe fresher. And that's why you think it's better than the last one. So I don't think it is better, but it's just, honestly, I fall in love with her more every single day. You know, it's not all roses, just a little caveat there, but overall, she is just divine. Anywho, I won't gush about her too much more. Rather, I'll ask you to gush about the podcast. See what I did there? If you wouldn't mind. And you can do that really, really simply by subscribing, rating and reviewing it wherever you listen. Right, enough from me. I am going to hand over to my chat with Jessica. And yeah, just say thank you so much for listening. And I will be back next week. Take care. Bye-bye. Before we start, time for a quick ad break. Knowing your fertile days are so important if you are trying to get pregnant or trying to avoid it. With the Mirror Fertility Tracker, you will know your fertile window up to 6 days. It is the only tracker on the market that provides you an accurate and personalized ovulation analysis by tracking your LH and estrogen hormone levels. Find out more at mirrorcare.com. There's a link in the show notes, and get £25 off your tracker with the code FINALLYPREGNANT. Hi there, Jessica. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you doing?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing well. I mean, considering this, you know, cracked and uncertain world that we've been navigating for so long now, I'm maintaining my sanity, so I'm grateful.
Wonderful. It is. It's been going on for almost a year now, and just like in the UK, we had an announcement just a few days ago, and hopefully we really can see the light at the end of that tunnel come spring, summer mainly.
Wonderful.
But yeah, it's just, you do wonder what our new normal will be when it becomes normal again.
Yeah, I actually can anticipate having a lot of anxiety actually around returning to quote unquote normal life after living like this for so long, right? I mean, it's taken a toll.
It really has, absolutely. Yeah. But during this period, you have been writing a book about your experiences and the experiences of others as well. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that to start with?
Sure. Yeah, I can't believe that it's all come together. It's actually surreal that it's happening. So yeah, the book comes out on March 9th, and it's called I Had a Miscarriage, a Memoir, a Movement. And the book opens with my story, my experience of my loss, and then sort of gets really deep into the fact that I'm a psychologist and I've specialized in women's reproductive and maternal mental health now for over a decade. So I opted to specialize in this field before having gone through any of it. And so the unique situation and position I was in, sitting across from women, hearing about what it was like to struggle to get pregnant, lose pregnancies, lose infants, be pregnant again after all of that, marriage and returning to work and friendships, family, all of that. I heard it all and I listened intently and empathically. And then it happened to me. So the book gets it invites people into what it was like as a psychologist to have heard all this and to not understand it physically, like to not understand corporeally or emotionally even until I did. And so the book is part memoir, but then the part that's more manifesto-y are the elements where it's sort of a call to action, you know, and it weaves in various stories. So obviously they're not real patients. It's sort of caricatures or fictitious patients that I bring in. And in that regard, I really wanted to be sure that the book included all types of loss, every imaginable experience, so that every person who reads this book can locate themselves within it, whether it's the exact experience or the feelings or the shame, all of that. So the book's coming out and I'm proud that I somehow navigated this through the end of the book through COVID. I don't know how it all happened, but it is.
Well, it's something that you are clearly are so passionate about. One of the things, and you've kindly sent me a copy and I haven't read all of it, but there was one thing right at the very beginning, actually. And I'm going to read that if you wouldn't mind, but just what you said there ultimately is something that I feel so passionately about. And it's about, you know, I have this kind of hashtag that I use sometimes, every story matters, about being really inclusive. And you say right near the beginning, the pregnancy, motherhood, loss community should aim to be inclusive of all experiences and all perspectives. Miscarriage, early loss, later loss, recurrent loss, stillbirth, twin loss, termination for medical reasons, neonatal and infant loss, not getting pregnant in the first place. And that was writing that actually was one of the bits that really I felt, yes, you know, and others, and all are profoundly important and all a part of this story. And in here, all are welcome. And that just really, really, you know, there's loads of it, but that really spoke to me. Like, it was just like, yes, I want to keep reading this. This is important.
It's interesting. I just said to my husband last night, you know, that I'm so glad that my team encouraged me to do a preface that really sort of laid out what people were about to see in the book, and that it shows my standpoint on this topic and the field in general. Because unfortunately, I think a lot of books in the loss community pick and choose who they think should be included. And I find that, you know, really unfortunate and totally off-putting and really sort of unfair. So, you know, for example, yeah, terminating for medical reasons, these women should feel included as much as anybody else in the pregnancy and infant loss community.
You have an Instagram post here, why so many women are forced to lie about terminating wanted pregnancies. And a conversation I had for one of the other episodes of the podcast with Liz Morana, and she spoke about how she had to have a termination for medical reasons. And on returning to work, she felt really kind of the shame and the, about answering people's questions around it. And that was something that happened, you know, 11, 12 years ago. And fortunately, there is a lot more talk and awareness and story sharing and support out there now for people who are experiencing that. But you're right, there still is, sadly, that stigma around it. And all loss, ultimately, that's
true.
The Instagram community and people and your book and, you know, like are really working hard to break down ultimately.
It's time, right? I mean, with all of the statistics that we have around, you know, 1 in 4 pregnancies end in miscarriage, about 160, you know, 1 in 160 in stillbirth, like 1 in 7 couples struggle with fertility. I mean, it's just too many people to pretend like this isn't an excruciating experience for millions of people around the world. So yeah, I really do think it's time once and for all to disband, you know, this sort of antiquated silence, stigma, and shame that shrouds this topic.
Absolutely. And you spoke earlier about your own experience, and it would be really good if we can explore that a little, because as you said, you had sat across the table from people who have been through this, and then you find yourself, so you had had one pregnancy, one successful pregnancy, and had your first child.
Yes.
And then you sadly, with your second pregnancy, experienced a miscarriage at 16 weeks. Is that right?
That's true. Yes.
And how did that change? Seems like a silly question, really. How did that change your view? Yeah. Talk to us a little bit about
that.
It's
a big one. Yeah. So basically, I got pregnant straight away with my son. The pregnancy was completely smooth and uneventful and like storybook. You know, we were able to go on a baby moon internationally. I mean, it was just, and I had, yes, I had an inkling of how grateful I should be. But I think until you've gone through something terrible, it's very tempting to take it for granted. And that's just sort of human nature, I think. But I was naive and I was blissful. And it was, you know, it definitely set me up for even more trauma when my trauma unfolded, because it was so smooth. I didn't really you know, have any expectations for that it would be otherwise. And then about 3.5 years later, we decided to expand our family. And I talk in the book about sort of having ambivalence, which I think is like a very under-talked about and important aspect of pregnancy and pregnancy loss as well. You know, I had mixed feelings about having a second child because I really took to motherhood, but I'm also very into my career. And I couldn't necessarily like wrap my head around what it would mean to have two and like running in different directions at the park. That just when I would see mothers with that situation, it overwhelmed me beyond words. And I just couldn't see myself in that role. But with time and a lot of thought, we decided to go for it. I got pregnant. And then, yes, as you mentioned, 16 weeks into my second pregnancy, I had a miscarriage while I was home by myself. And, you know, the way that things unfolded were unfortunately so traumatic and frightening that, yes, it inevitably affected the way I felt about pregnancy in general. My OBGYN suggested that we wait 3 cycles if we wanted to try again. And so, you know, for better or worse, I got pregnant on the 4th cycle. And, you know, again, I explore this in the book. I mean, age wasn't really on our side. And so even though I wish that I had given myself a lot more time to grieve, I didn't feel like I could. If we did want to, you know, go on to expand our family. So the truth is, you know, my OB said, you know, you'll probably have some sense of relief once you pass the time of your miscarriage, you know, the number of weeks that you were pregnant. But unfortunately, I think because of my position at work, and what I do for a living, I was now all too aware of the fact that, okay, now I've become a statistic. All of these other statistics could happen to me now. Like there's nobody, I don't believe that there's a, you know, a God or somebody sort of watching and deciding like, okay, you've had your fair share of trauma, like no more for you in this lifetime. I mean, I sort of wish there was somebody doing that maybe, but I don't believe there is. So I was terrified until the end. And in my book, I explore how I kind of thought that once my healthy baby daughter emerged, that I would have a wholehearted sense of relief and really sort of shed these months of fear. And it didn't totally work like that. Like it did and it didn't, you know, she came out so quietly. My son had come out screaming and she was very quiet. And that quietness scared the shit out of me. And I remember, you know, asking the nurse, like, is everything okay? You know, so it's my worry did not completely go away. Pregnancy after pregnancy loss, I think, is a topic that we have to talk so much more about given the statistics around loss, because so many people do go on to get pregnant again. And, you know, depending on their experience of loss, it can haunt them throughout. And that's like a long time to hold on to stress and worry, anxiety. So, you know, I really think that we deserve to have a wider and more candid conversation about this.
Yeah, well, I completely agree. When I was pregnant with my daughter, Ren, and people came to me and asked me, you know, where is the support for this stage of the journey? And there wasn't anything that I could find at that point. And some bits and pieces, like that's why I created this very podcast. And fortunately, there is a bit more support out there at the moment, but you're absolutely right. And the more we can raise this conversation, the better. I think yeah. One of the difficult things about being involved in this community for so many people, and you mentioned there yourself, you know, that because of your knowledge and experience, you were worried right up until the end, until she arrived. And even then, it didn't completely subside. And because we're so immersed in this community, we can often feel like it's definitely going to happen to us, you know, and we know the worst case scenarios, and that can add to our anxiety. And there is a fine line between knowledge and blissful ignorance. And many of us don't have that choice necessarily, but all pregnancies are different. That's the important thing. And the statistics definitely are there, but all pregnancies are different. And this is about, I guess, kind of validating people's experiences and making sure that they feel that there are people out there that understand and that have been through similar, and that there is hope as well, very much hope.
There is. And along the lines of what you just said, I also think it's so important, you know, every pregnancy is different, and hearing about hard stories does not in any way inform the chromosomes that are developing in your body, right? So I think that as a global world, you know, as a community, people think that if we talk about loss, somehow it will infect somebody else. And that's just not the case at all. I mean, I you know, it's kind of magical thinking to think like, oh, but if we talk about it, it's going to happen. Or I've even heard some people getting feedback from friends or family saying like, oh, you were so negative through the whole thing. Like, you thought this was going to happen. Maybe that's why it happened. I mean, that none of that is possible. You know, I mean, we know that people have like had healthy babies, even in wartime and in very difficult, horrible situations. So I don't think that we can have in our minds this idea that if we just live fully unstressed and fully, you know, in a meditative state for 9 months, that the pregnancy will definitely be healthy. It doesn't work like that. We just don't have the kind of control that people want to think that we do.
I think that's so important to say. And there's a lot out there at the moment about this toxic positivity and
exactly,
you know, trying to make ourselves feel positive and feel happy and feel confident that everything's going to be okay, and, you know, smiling through gritted teeth. And you know what, like, sometimes you just need to let it all out, don't you? And something I talk about quite often is like an emotional detox. If you need to cry, cry. If you need to scream, scream. If you need to just be sad and miserable and upset and feel sorry for yourself, you know what, like, just wallow in that sometimes, because the way that I see it is, you know, like, you're letting out the kind of negativity and the difficult feelings, and hopefully therefore, and like, obviously this is not based on scientific fact or anything, but this is just my kind of analogy of it. You're making room then for the good and the positive and the happy and the joy, and it's going to ebb and flow throughout the pregnancy, isn't it? Just like a trying to conceive journey.
Well, and in life, right? I mean, no feeling sticks forever. So I think, you know, we try as humans so hard to not fall into the depths of despair or grief or, you know, these more challenging feelings. But why not? I think people get afraid that then you are going to stay there, you're going to live there, you're going to get caught there, you're going to be stuck. And feelings change, and feelings do not last forever. And so I think the more comfortable we get with just allowing ourselves to know, how am I feeling right now? And honoring that rather than fighting against it, the sooner we emerge from it usually. And so you're right. I mean, we are complex beings. We don't need to only be happy or only be positive or only be joyful. That's not realistic. And we surely wouldn't want to model that idea for the next generation either, right? Because then they're going to be stuffing their feelings and turning to, you know, ways to numb out or whatever. We can feel sad. We can feel angry. A lot of people feel angry in the aftermath of loss. And that's another thing that we talk so little about, because, oh, women shouldn't be angry, or, you know, anger is an active emotion. So oftentimes anger is really about feeling depressed or feeling disappointed or feeling super disempowered. So yes, I'm totally in agreement with you that we've got to be done with this toxic positivity stuff and make room to be fully human in all its complexity.
Absolutely. And in your professional opinion, I guess, and obviously it's going to be different for every single individual, but having seen all of the people that you have seen and potentially having seen them through pregnancy thereafter and your own experience, there must be a bit of a line for people who are between, you know, like feeling down and feeling upset and having those wallowing kind of periods of time and actually getting to the point where people need to seek help. And are there any things that are really indicative? Just if anyone was listening and they were thinking, yes, I'm wallowing, but I've been wallowing for a bit too long. Like my take on this, like, is that everyone, like, I wish that everyone saw a counselor or, you know, a
Me
relevant
too.
Support person, like, constantly, basically. like this is a bit of a sweeping statement, but I feel like America is a bit more on board with that generally. And I think that that's important. I think it would help us through the good periods of our lives and through the difficult ones. It's not Amen. Always possible because of time and money and all of that. But it would be really interesting to hear your perspective on that.
Yeah, I love what you're saying about how universally available mental health should be, or mental health treatment should be. I completely agree with you on that. And I think that there is this kind of misconception that people should only turn to therapy if they're in a crisis. I think, you know, with some of my longtime patients and some people who come multiple times a week, I mean, the depth that we get to go to when there are times and, you know, even years where there isn't anything that's crisis oriented, maybe we get to really get into the joy. What does it feel like to be happy? Or what does it feel like to be scared of losing that happiness or whatever? So yes, I think that's a really important point you're making. And in answer to your question, you know, I think if anybody is listening and wondering, has this been going on too long? Or would it be helpful to get an outside opinion? Or, you know, I've been feeling pretty low for a pretty long time now. Or the feedback I'm getting from friends and family has not been, you know, significantly helpful. In fact, maybe it's even landed pretty badly. Reach out. Like, I would try to follow one's instinct around that. But it's easier said than done, because mental health, just like pregnancy loss, is completely shrouded in stigma too. But no one has to know you're going. Not that there's anything to be ashamed of course, but if you want it to be, you know, private and you don't want to get into it with other people, no one has to know you're going. And I find that, you know, sometimes people make jokes or there's memes out there about, like, you know, your best friends are like unpaid therapists or something. And I, of course, as a psychologist, don't really agree with that at all. Our friends are people in our lives who we're supposed to be mutually benefiting from or mutually supporting one another. When you seek counseling, you have this very unique opportunity to just talk about yourself, to just feel whatever it is you are feeling. And if it's, you know, a good therapist, they're not trying to change anything you feel. They're not trying to fix anything. They're not, you know, talking about silver linings, or at least you know that dot, dot, dot. You know, it's so there's no minimizing, hopefully. So therapy can just be so illuminating because there's validation that maybe you're not able to receive elsewhere. And when we go to friends to get feedback or support, they, of course, are coming from their own viewpoint. And inevitably, their story often gets weaved into the conversation as well. And so a therapist is there to really sort of help that person in whatever situation they are in, without getting mixed up with the therapist's history or current life.
And just for anyone listening, right now in the UK, if they don't know already, then within the maternity team that you will be seeing your midwives and people, there will always be a mental health midwife. And so you can ask to be referred. And I did ask, I didn't cry. I didn't, you know, and they kind of, my midwife, who wasn't the best, I will say, you know, was kind of like, you're fine, you're fine. And I ended up seeking a counsellor myself who wasn't actually fertility or pregnancy related, but that wasn't really where my stress was at the time, to be perfectly honest. It was just impacting my own pregnancy. But I just urge people to ask for that perinatal team, perinatal midwife. In the US, what does that care look like? Is it all private?
It is. I mean, wow, how lucky you are to have it integrated. What I want to say, though, on the note that you just mentioned about what your midwife said to you, I urge people to push back if and when your feelings are minimized by a healthcare provider, to simply say, I might seem fine, but I still want the referral. Or I might seem okay, but I'm not. Or I might seem okay to you, but I, you know, I don't know if I will be in the near future or whatever. Because, you know, these people are not in positions to determine that. And unfortunately, you know, postpartum depression and anxiety occur, you know, I think it's 1 in 8 women struggle, at least here in America, with postpartum depression. And so healthcare providers are not necessarily trained to spot stuff like that. And so if you're feeling like a different version of yourself while you're pregnant or after a loss or after a live baby, it's very important to stand your ground, stick up for yourself, and find what it is you need, you know.
So, so true. And I wish I'd done more. And I think the difficult thing is often when you're in that position, you're not strong enough to do that.
And
we are in COVID times at the moment, so it's not necessarily possible to bring someone with you. But there are ways, you know, like if and when you can, certainly, you know, bring a friend, bring a partner, bring a parent with you who can help advocate on behalf of you if you don't feel like you can for yourself. Because you're right, they see you kind of, you know, for a short period of time. That isn't necessarily their speciality. And if you are thinking that you need the support, then you probably do.
And you're so right, though. I mean, it's so hard to assert yourself when you're struggling, you know, and so, and especially if it's a healthcare provider and you have respect for them, then you might even get confused, like, oh, maybe she's right. Maybe I'm overblowing this and maybe it's just hormones, or you start to kind of maybe blame yourself or turn in on yourself in some way that could eventually be harmful. So I love that idea of having somebody there with you to advocate on your behalf post-COVID.
Yes, absolutely. That was particularly, I have to say, it was following a conversation I had with the chairperson of Pregnancy Sickness Support, which is one of the episodes for this series of the podcast. And that was one of the things that she had said, definitely do if you're feeling sick, if you, you know, bring someone with you who can explain really how bad things have got or are outside of it. Because it's often the case, isn't it, that you get to the doctors and everything feels fine, you know, and yes. But actually then you go home and 2 days later you're in a completely different situation. So
that is so true. Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah.
Can I ask you, in your own experience and those people that you've spoken to over the years, parenting after loss? Obviously, again, it's different for everyone and everyone's experiences, but are there any themes that you have come across when we're talking about people who are parenting after loss?
Well, I feel emotional just thinking about this, because in the book, I share how eventually I did talk to my older son about my loss, because he was too young when the loss happened to tell him. We didn't tell him that I was pregnant. And we decided, you know, the following day when I was crying and it was very clear to him that I was upset about something, we said then, you know, we thought mommy was pregnant, but she's not, is how we put it, because he was too tender an age to be able to comprehend, and I didn't want to overwhelm him. But it was years later that he brought it up, and we were talking about my work, and I won't give it all away here because it's in the book, but I do think that I hope that in an effort to sort of change the zeitgeist once and for all around pregnancy and infant loss, that we include loss in conversations with our children. And here, at least in America, I do think that pregnancy loss and fertility issues even should be included in sex education programs, because sex education focuses solely on how not to get pregnant, right? And that is hugely important, and I completely believe in that as well. However, it doesn't include the fact that some pregnancies do not make it. And I think they need to learn this earlier on. It doesn't have to be a scare tactic. It doesn't have to be even talked about in emotional terms. It's a fact. And kids deserve to know these facts. So my daughter, who's now 7, and she's in the book because, you know, I write about her birth and everything and what it was like to raise her when she was tiny, but the book was finished before I could write about this part, which is my 7-year-old daughter now knows about my miscarriage. And just the other day she asked me, and I thought she was actually asking me like some deep psychological question. She said, "Mommy, what's the most painful thing that's ever happened to you?" And I was a little taken aback, you know, that she was asking something so soulful and meaningful. And so I said, "Well, sweetie, I think my miscarriage is the most painful thing that's ever happened in my life." And she was like, "No, no, mommy. I mean, like, what's the worst boo-boo you've ever had?" You know, she really just meant like a scrape. But I decided to go with that, though. And I said, "So you mean physically?" "Well, actually, it's the same answer, honey. My miscarriage was the most physically painful thing I've ever been through." And we had talked about my miscarriage before. I mean, she knows about this book, and she just like shouts it out to friends when we're on distant play dates. You know, she likes to be like, "My mommy wrote a book about miscarriage." And it's so wonderful that kids don't know that there's stigma and shame and that they can speak so freely about this life event. And then she said to me, though, after I, you know, reiterated that it was the most physically painful thing I've ever been through, she said, "So mommy, what did that baby look like?" And it was just the most vulnerable, most beautiful moment, you know, just to see again how children want information, and children, unlike adults, are not blocked, right? Like, they're not working to be in denial like we are. You know, we're like trying to push off all the difficult things in the world and in our lives. And they don't, I mean, fortunately, especially, you know, if they're in healthy and solid situations, they're not having to navigate that. And so that's a long way of saying, I think parenting after loss should include, if, you know, the family wants to, can include conversations about loss. Now, I don't necessarily, I hope, you know, people don't misunderstand. I'm not saying that, you know, it needs to be talked about on a daily basis, or that there has to be photos all over the house of, you know, a miscarriage, you know, obviously. So it's really individual. And it really depends on how people feel about it. I think because my pregnancy was so far along, it was so dramatic, it changed my life so completely. And because it's so inextricably linked to my work, I feel it's important that they grow up knowing that it's a normative outcome of pregnancy.
I hear that. And I know that, you know, and I'm sat here thinking, you know, you're a professional, and I have no doubt that you kind of have a lot more tools to do that. I
don't know.
I'm thinking that I completely agree. It's a scary prospect, though. It really, and I'm sure it was for you also.
Yes,
to talk about it. I totally agree, and I was furiously nodding along as you were talking about the fertility and loss education. It really does, and there are projects going on here to try and make it part of the curriculum, which we can only hope that that is the case. Because you're right, it's like, oh my gosh, if you look at a boy, you're going to get pregnant. You know, like that's what the current education is.
Yes.
And we need to make sure that people are informed and you know, have that knowledge so that they can make the correct choices for them. I guess I'm talking fertility related, but, you know, like also if loss does occur as well after pregnancy, then, you know, we need to make sure that people have a bit more information about it. That's just so important. It really is. And will continue to help break down the stigma around it as well. Definitely.
Yes.
Maybe I could ask you perhaps for some final words on, you know, the I Had a Miscarriage movement. You know, talk about your Instagram and you share other people's stories there. Maybe you could just share a little bit more about that before we do head off.
Yeah, I mean, it was back in 2014, I believe, when I started the I Had a Miscarriage campaign. And really, I didn't have some grand plan in mind. I just knew that I wanted to create awareness and really invite people and almost dare people around the world to investigate whether or not they still had any lingering feelings of shame or if they were somehow sort of buying into the stigma themselves, because we, you know, we are a product of our culture, so it's hard not to. And so I wanted to kind of hold up a sign without seeing my face so that everybody could sort of just relate to the words themselves. And in my first New York Times piece, that image is there. And, you know, that sort of launched me into this whole world of honesty and candor around this ubiquitous topic. And yeah, so I got on Instagram, I think in 2015 when I started this line of pregnancy and infant loss cards. And before I knew it, you know, there were people swarming, and I wanted to include other women's stories because this is not about me. This is about the topic. And this is really about making indelible change in the world for ourselves, but for future generations as well. I mean, my hope is that future generations don't know anything of this stigma. And that they think like, oh, of course, we're talking about miscarriage, just like we're talking about what we're going to have for dinner. Like it's just is what it is, you know? And I feel so grateful for this community because it really has helped me heal through my journey and connecting with people worldwide, women like yourself, you know, just it brings some sense of connectivity that I don't think we get with people that haven't been there, haven't been in our shoes.
Yeah, I completely agree. I do, as I have with pretty much everything you've said. But I just really appreciate all that you do to help support people and, you know, share other people's stories and just get people talking about this so that the support is there and the understanding is there. It is incredible the work you do. Your book, I Had a Miscarriage, comes out on the 9th of March. So we're recording this pre then, but it will now be available for people to buy when this actually goes out. And yeah, I just want to say thank you so much for all the work you do. And
right back at you.
Coming, yeah. Thank you. And coming and thank sharing you. Your story with me. It's and with everyone listening. That's amazing. Thank
of
you
course.
So much.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
You take care then. Bye-bye.
You too.